Hello and welcome to the D3Football.com and Around the Nation podcast for the week of November 5th, 2007. I'm Pat Coleman.
And I'm Keith McMillan.
And we'd like to welcome the 9 new members to the Dirty Dozen, teams that clinched automatic bids to the NCAA playoffs on Saturday. That's teams such as Wisconsin Whitewater, Mary Hart and Baylor, Washington and Jefferson, College of New Jersey, Muhlenberg, Franklin, North Carolina Wesleyan, Widener, and Concordia, Wisconsin. They joined Mount Union, Wabash, and St. Norbert in the field of 32. Some familiar faces, obviously, but some new teams on this list as well.
Yeah, and that's kind of what's been exciting about this season. College of New Jersey has been a pretty big surprise. Franklin getting over the hump against Mount St. Joseph earlier this season and clinching the Heartland title. North Carolina Wesleyan, you know, program just a few years old down there. So it's Widener, getting to see Widener back in the mix. And then also you look at this week coming up, you have a couple surprise teams playing with a chance to get in the playoffs on the line. Illinois Wesleyan is one that jumps out at me. Randolph-Macon is another one, and California Lutheran.
One of the biggest surprises, you mentioned College of New Jersey. They were picked 7th of 8 teams in the NJAX preseason coaches poll. Instead, they're the conference champs, 8-1 overall and 6-0 in the league.
Yeah, Randolph 8 wins in a row after that August 31st 15-0 loss to Muhlenberg. And you know, we were in New Jersey early in the season, and we were talking about Kane, and we talked about, you know, perennial strength of Rowan, and you think about Cortland and all these other teams in the conference, but we really didn't give a lot of thought to TCNJ. And all they've done this year is average 170 yards per game on the ground, but their leader Dan Dornicker averages just 63 yards, so obviously they're mixing it up. They're using more than just one player going down the depth chart. And they've only allowed 10.9 points per game, none in the first quarter, and that really jumps out at you.
Andrew Larkin's been big on the defensive side of the ball for the Lions. He's got 6 interceptions and has returned 2 of them for touchdowns. Now, of course, with 12 teams clinched, that means there's 10 conferences that are still up in the air. Some of these are fairly simple. The ODAC, the IIAC, the MIAC all have head-to-head games coming up this week for the automatic bid. And the NEFC's 2 division champs meet in the title game on Saturday. So let's look at the others in progressing level of difficulty to understand. Let's start with the SCAC.
All right, it's pretty simple still. Trinity wins, and they're in on the head-to-head tiebreaker win against Millsaps. So that goes back to that play last week and how important that lateral play was. Trinity loses, and Millsaps gets the automatic bid. Trinity is at Austin, and Millsaps is playing new conference member Birmingham Southern.
And Birmingham Southern games do not count in the league standings. In the Empire 8, it's St. John Fisher, Alfred, and Hartwick all tied at 4-1 in the league going into the final weekend, and St. John Fisher and Alfred play each other.
All right, we've got this one under control, too. If St. John Fisher wins and Hartwick wins at Utica, which is just 3-6 this season, 1-4 in the Empire 8, Hartwick wins the automatic bid, which would definitely be one of the unexpected surprises that we'd have to add to that list. If St. John Fisher wins and Hartwick loses, Fisher wins the title. And if Alfred wins, they're in because they beat Hartwick head-to-head. So far, so good.
And Alfred needs to win because after losing 2 games in a row, they'd be 7-3 would be on the outside looking in. Saxon's schedule was pretty backloaded with season-ending games at Hobart, Ithaca, and St. John Fisher. Moving on to the CCIW, where Wheaton, North Central, and Illinois Wesleyan each enter the final week tied at 5-1, and Wheaton plays at Illinois Wesleyan.
And the Thunder are the only ones that control their own destiny because they're in with a win. For North Central to win the title, it must win, and Illinois Wesleyan must beat Wheaton. And that's a team that North Central just beat last week, 23-7. For Illinois Wesleyan to win the title, it has to beat Wheaton and hope North Central loses at Carthage.
Yeah, Carthage can't win the title, but they could end up 8-2. They just might be in the playoff conversation for a Pool C bid if it ends the season with those back-to-back victories against Wheaton and North Central. All right, on to the SCIAC, where we start getting beyond those head-to-head tiebreakers if things don't break right. Cal Lutheran comes in 5-0, Occidental and Lutheran... Cal Lutheran comes in at 5-0, Occidental and Redlands at 4-1.
And Redlands and Cal Lutheran play each other, and Cal Lutheran is in with the win. Cal Lutheran also gets in if they win and Occidental wins at Whittier to force a 3-way tie using the Rose Bowl rule, which is sometimes controversial, I guess, to some folks. And that's where the team that has been out of the playoffs the longest gets the nod. Redlands can only win the title if it beats Cal Lutheran and Occidental loses to Whittier, which is not something that we would expect, but given the way Occidental's been this season, up and down, it certainly could happen.
And Occidental cannot win the automatic bid in the SCIAC under any circumstances, I guess barring a forfeit of a previous game that's already been decided. We're going to delve pretty deeply into the MIAA's tiebreaker manual to find what would be invoked if Olivet, Hope, and Alma each remain tied after this week's games.
Yeah, this one's a little crazy. They're each 5-1 in the conference, and if they each win this week, they play... Alma's at Adrian, Kalamazoo's at Olivet, and Hope is at Wisconsin Lutheran. So if they each win this week, they'll each be 6-1, 6-4 overall. Overall record is the tiebreaker after head-to-head, and all would be even. So we understand that you go to the winning percentage of the teams played in non-conference action to decide this. Currently, Hope's opponents are 20-7, Olivet's 18-9, and Alma's 16-11. Now, each of the three teams' opponents play this weekend, with Hope's opponents facing the toughest slate. River Falls at Oshkosh, Central at Wartburg, and Wheaton at Illinois Wesleyan. Olivet's opponents are Illinois Wesleyan versus Wheaton, Wittenberg versus Hiram, and Elmhurst versus North Park.
That's basically two wins guaranteed, and IW and Wheaton play head-to-head with two conferences titles on the line. Just for the record, if one of the three MIAA teams loses on Saturday, it goes like this. An Alma loss gives Olivet the title, a Hope loss gives Alma the title, and an Olivet loss gives Hope the title. And if you thought that was complicated, then we get to the Liberty League, which is a four-way tie at the top, and nobody can win the title without help. Keith, help.
All right, I've broken this one down. Got to go to the notes, though. Each team, 5-1 in conference, and they're 1-1 versus each other. And when I say each team, I'm talking about the four teams that are currently tied and at the top of the standings: Hobart, Rochester, RPI, and Union. So not only are they each trying to win their head-to-head game against one of these other teams in the group, they also going to have a rooting interest in the other game. Hobart, they need to win, and they want Union to win the Dutchman Shoes game. Rochester, they need to win, and they'll be rooting for RPI. RPI, it needs to win, and they'll be rooting for Hobart. Union needs to win, and they'll be rooting for Rochester. Basically, each team is rooting for the team it already beat.
And these basically do just come down to head-to-head tiebreakers among the teams in the group. There will be two teams tied at the top of that conference when the dust and rubber pellets settle on Saturday. But we've been through, obviously, some various tiebreakers, some things that involve, you know, games that are not even played in the conference, some games, a conference that just goes straight to the Rose Bowl rule, which basically is the fairness rule. We don't get into any margin of victory discussions this season, but we've certainly seen it in the past. It doesn't seem like there's a real good way to settle tiebreakers, though. In football, where you play just one round robin, there's bound to be these three-way ties at the top that can't be broken by any conventional means.
Yeah, exactly. If it's a two-way tiebreaker, you just go to the head-to-head game, and it seems fair. If there's a four-way, you know, it usually breaks up somehow, and you can go down to the head-to-head game by eliminating a team in the mix. But when it's three-way and they've all gone 1-1 against each other, there are different ways to do it, and none of them are really more accepted, I guess, across the country than others. You know, we talked about the Rose Bowl rule, which is basically taking the team that's had the longest drought, which is maybe not fair, a little more fair than a coin flip, but it's kind of like just having mercy on one of the teams because they haven't been in a long time.
You know, otherwise, just a reminder, scoring 85 points does nothing for you in terms of playoff selection. Margin of victory is not a factor at all. St. Olaf runs it up on its crosstown rival Carleton, 85-28, and I'm comfortable saying it that way because the Olies scored 28 points in the fourth quarter, including the starting quarterback hitting a starting receiver for 49 yards on the possession that ended in the 71st point 2 plays later.
Yeah, and I mean, when you get into the 80s and when you're throwing the ball in the 70s, you know, you really don't have much of a defense against the running it up accusation. And you know, we've talked a little bit about this on the board this year. What are the reasons for keeping your starters in the game, and things like that? But I mean, the sportsmanship factor does sort of come into play, I think, when you get up there in 85. And you know, really, honestly, I looked at the board on Saturday and I thought someone had just transposed 58.
Now, Carleton is a program that might be able to come back and bite St. Olaf later, and this is in the next couple years. You know, and that's a crosstown rivalry that just, I think, got a little bit more heat turned up on it. All right, I know where you'll be this weekend. Your alma mater plays for the ODAC title against Hampton-Sydney. I'll be at home monitoring games. I leave for Charlotte to do selection show analysis on ESPNU on Sunday morning. That's where the bracket will be unveiled on Selection Sunday, but tell us a little bit about your game.
Well, the thing that's really interesting about this game is that it was a huge rivalry, obviously going back to the late 1800s, but it was a lot of years. When you talk to the alma mater at Randolph-Macon in Hampton-Sydney, it was the game, and that's what they've nicknamed it, because it was the one that decided the ODAC title, you know, in the 70s and sometimes in the 80s. And it went all the way up to 93 was the last time they had one where it decided the title. And the league has just been spread out, I guess, over recent years with Emory and Henry and Bridgewater having their runs of dominance.
Some other games coming up on Saturday in rivalry action. Amherst is at Williams, one of the games that claims the biggest little game in America moniker. Another game that claims that is the Cortica Jug game as Cortland State goes to Ithaca. Those are two teams that are trying to make an impressive finish and hope that an 8-2 team gets into the playoffs with an at-large bid where none did last year. And of course, the other big rivalry game is the Monon Bell game with Wabash at DePauw. We mentioned a lot of the big games with the conference impact as well. Those three rivalry games have impact no matter what happens.
Yeah, because when you're in a rivalry like that, it's almost like a second homecoming because everybody comes back to school for that weekend, and those are the ones that the ex-players care about and the alumni care about. And it's kind of cliche to say, well, if you have a bad season, at least you beat the rival, whoever it may be, to salvage the season. But I think, in the case of someone like DePauw this year, they can't get into the playoffs, and they know Wabash is going to the playoffs, but they can at least, spoil a home game for them and send them on the road in the playoffs or something like that. And that's the type of thing that you take a little pride in.
That's our Around the Nation podcast, previewing Week 11. Don't forget to check back at d3football.com throughout the week, including Keith's Around the Nation column on Thursday. We'll also be bringing you playoff selection projections, our projected playoff field on Wednesday evening, and then once again on Saturday night heading into Sunday morning for Selection Sunday.